Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm so programmed that when I hear this song outside of this time on a Sunday morning, I think I've said this before on this program, but I literally start doing the show. What's that all about? Well, good morning, everybody. Happy holidays. Some of you have been observing Passover, and this is the day that some folks observe as Easter Sunday. We are going to have a doozy of a program this morning, and good morning. I'm Bob Salter. We are live and have good guests with us. We're actually going to have some guests in studio with us in our 7 o'clock hour of our program as well. The gentleman who joins us in hour one of our program has spoken with us before, and we'll be talking about an event that is taking place next weekend in Central Park. But we're going to be talking in a broad sense about the topic of Parkinson's disease. You say those words, and usually there is an immediate reaction. We'll be talking about that as well. Dr. Houman Azmi is joining us on our program. He's the director of the Division of Functional and Restorative Neurosurgery at Hackensack University Medical Center. There, he specializes in the surgical treatment of Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders. He's a partner at North Jersey Brain and Spine Center. That's on the web, by the way, at North Jersey Brain Spine, all as one word, .com. Dr. Azmi, it's nice to have you join us again on our program. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
We have spoken before. We're going to be talking about the 23rd Parkinson's Unity Walk in just a little bit. But, you know, in introducing you, I mentioned Parkinson's disease. And I said, generally speaking, you say that term and there is an immediate reaction from most people. Occasionally, someone will have no reaction, but most people have some reaction. What do you say to explain what Parkinson's disease is really all about?
Sure. Thank you so much for the invitation. Mm-hmm. And it's really important. This April is Parkinson's Awareness Month.
Right.
And your question goes to awareness about Parkinson's. So it's important to be aware of Parkinson's disease on many levels. As patients, of course, we need to be best advocate for ourselves. As caretakers, we need to know what's available for patients with Parkinson's disease. As physicians, we need to know how best to treat our patients. And as advocates in the community and on the policy level, it's also important to know about the disorder. So to your question of, you know, what is Parkinson's disease? So Parkinson's disease is a disorder that is caused because the brain does not make a neurotransmitter called dopamine. And it has some motor symptoms and some non-motor symptoms, how we describe them. So the motor symptoms are symptoms that we see are effects of how someone moves. For example, tremors, for example, rigidity, or slowness. And it can also have some other symptoms called the non-motor symptoms that can affect sleep, can affect thinking, the digestive system, and so forth. So, yes, a lot of people, when they hear that diagnosis, are taken aback by it. But the truth is, it is a treatable condition, and the more we're aware about the options out there, the better advocates we are about treating the disorder.
Who is most susceptible or at risk for Parkinson's disease?
So in general, Parkinson's happens in a bimodal fashion, meaning it has two peaks. Most often, it's in the 60s and 70s as we get older, but also there is a peak in a younger population. Called the young onset Parkinson's disease, which happens around the 40s.
And is it one gender more than the other who is more susceptible?
So for whatever reason, males have a slightly more the chance of developing Parkinson's disease. We don't know why that is.
And when we talk about the incidence of Parkinson's disease, is there any indication that there's a specific genetic link?
So there are certainly familial Parkinson's disorders. These are families that the disorder happens quite often in siblings and next generations and so forth. And there's clearly a genetic predisposition in those families. And there's been multiple different gene families that have been discovered among these families that develop Parkinson's early and at a high prevalence. But for the rest of the population that develops Parkinson's disease, the theory is that there is some sort of a genetic predisposition that some people may have, but they don't always develop Parkinson's disease. And there is another environmental factor that triggers. Some people describe it as basically pulling the trigger and then putting the bullet and then pulling the trigger. So meaning that you have to have both of those to develop Parkinson's disease.
When you say an environmental factor, I mean, what kind of environmental factor?
So there's been some studies that show families or patients that work around certain chemicals develop Parkinson's disease at a higher rate. For example, people that work around farm, it is thought pesticides may have a role in that trigger point, or some other dry cleaning chemicals perhaps may have a trigger role. So we have not really identified the actual agent, but there have been clusters in these areas that make scientists believe that there must be some kind of an environmental agent that is causing this.
When we talk about the number of Americans who are affected by Parkinson's, if I've read correctly, and I think you alluded to this earlier in our discussion, The figure is, I believe it's a little over 1 million people just in this country?
Yeah. Correct. About somewhere between 1 and 2 million people have Parkinson's in our country.
So it's about 60,000 new cases that are diagnosed each year.
Correct.
How are they diagnosed?
So Parkinson's is, till now, has been basically a clinical diagnosis, meaning we do not have a good test to diagnose it properly. It is not a blood test or a particular MRI. Although lately we have certain things, but they're not really great. But in general, how someone diagnoses Parkinson's disease is by examining the patient and looking for certain signs that are suspicious of Parkinson's disease in the patient's examination. And after a few visits and talking to the patient and really observing them, then someone can make a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. And I'm glad you brought this up, because it is enormously important to go to an expert that deals with Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's can be mimicked, and certainly in the beginning of it, with other disorders. And it is really critical to have a movement disorder expert that's a Parkinson's expert really see the patient and make sure it's a proper diagnosis. So not only the diagnosis can be made correctly, but also the patient can be counseled correctly and can be started on appropriate medication. And that is enormously important. Again, to be aware of Parkinson's disease, to be better advocates for ourselves, that is a very important information. So knowledge about the disorder and who to go to is critical in having good outcomes and making sure that patients are best treated for Parkinson's disease.
We're talking this hour of our program on The Fan with Dr. Houman Azmi. He is the director of the Division of Functional and Restorative Neurosurgery at Hackensack University Medical Center. He is a partner at North Jersey Brain and Spine Center. He's talking with us about the topic of Parkinson's disease. We'll be talking about the 23rd Parkinson's Unity Walk taking place next Saturday in Central Park in the city. And he's going to be with us for our entire 6 o'clock hour this Sunday morning. It is Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in a discussion with Dr. Houman Azmi on our program. Dr. Azmi is talking with us about the topic of Parkinson's disease. The 23rd Parkinson's Unity Walk takes place next Saturday in Central Park in the city. And he has joined us to share some information about the walk and talk with us about the topic of Parkinson's disease. I've mentioned the fact that he's the director of the Division of Functional and Restorative Neurosurgery at Hackensack University Medical Center. He is also a partner at North Jersey Brain and Spine Center. I wanted to ask you about something before we talk about the walk that gets into talking about this whole idea of, the study of movement disorders and the like. Because as you said that, I thought, how much exposure to movement disorders is there in medical school for doctors these days?
That's an excellent question, Bob. And the truth of it is, unfortunately, it's very limited. There is so much in medical school, certainly there's so much to learn about all different body systems and different disorders. So the neurological disorders are only a small part of learning about the heart and the GI system and the skeletal system and so forth. So if once someone is done with medical school, if they're interested in the nervous system, they can go to the field of neurology, and they do basically what's called a residency training program. So they go to a program, they become interns and residents for about 3 years, 3 to 4 years, where they take care of neurological disorders and learn from neurologists, essentially, about these disorders. And even those doctors, their exposure to movement disorders is not that much. It is only a fraction of all of neurological disorders. They learn about multiple sclerosis, they learn about ALS, they learn about all kinds of pain syndromes and so forth. And so movement disorders, again, it becomes a small part of that. It's just the nature of how we learn, and there's really no fault with it. It is just how it is. So if someone is interested in taking care of Parkinson's patients, then after they finish their residency, they do something called a fellowship, where they go to a hospital or a group that is an expert in taking care of movement disorders, and that's all they do. And they spend 1 to 2 years with that hospital system, with that training program, to learn specifically about Parkinson's disease and other movement disorders, their diagnosis and their treatment. So it is really important to recognize that, because most physicians, not to their own fault, it's just the nature of all the things we have to deal with, do not know much about Parkinson's disease, and that also goes for a lot of generally trained neurologists. Unfortunately, there's so much, and that's in every field. There's so much medication that is coming out. So if you're not in the field, you don't know about their indications, you don't know about their side effects, their interactions with other medications. So it's really critical to go to an expert. Just like if you had a very serious heart problem, you would want to go to someone that is really an expert in dealing with that. The same goes for Parkinson's disease.
And when we talk about the study of Parkinson's disease, is the leading research and even approach to management and treatment of Parkinson's disease, is that taking place in this country, or are there other countries that are doing things that we're looking at?
So what's great about the medical community is certainly there's, even though there's competition between Europe and Asia and the U.S. In terms of the scientific studies and investigation, the core group of people that are investigating work together. I think that it's really nice for many disorders, because their aim is to treat the disorder and hopefully find a cure for this problem. So there is definitely excellent research going on in Europe, in Canada, in the States, and in Asia as well. And there is a collaborative environment where doctors speak to each other, they present their works to each other, and even though there's some friendly competition there, but I think in the end it serves the patient better because we're sharing knowledge and sharing what we find with each other.
And the natural question that comes up when we talk about research always points to money. What's funding like?
Unfortunately, funding has been on a downturn as the economy has changed. In the U.S. in particular, funding for medical research, just with funding for everything, has been on a downturn. So the National Institute of Health is one of the main funding agencies for a lot of investigators, although there's also private funding as well. But the government funding comes from the National Institute of Health, and their budget has been reduced. And that is unfortunate, because research is expensive. It's essentially inefficient, but that's how we make discoveries. That's all the benefits that we have from medical technology and medical the drugs, and our quality of life is better now than it was decades ago, is because of that the budget that went into investigation and resulted in a product that is useful for Americans, not only Americans, but, you know, world citizens. So, as again, part of the awareness about Parkinson's disease is us putting our policymakers, putting our representatives to task, because it's the only way that we will be able to come up with a cure. I think some private agencies, the Michael J. Fox Foundation, the Muhammad Ali Foundation, and the Parkinson's Foundation have been incredibly good at putting Parkinson's disease on the front burner and actually providing quite a lot of support and funding for research, but it still remains that our national funding for all research, all medical research, has gone down, and that's not going to be helpful for Americans as we get older, and we need newer and better treatment options.
You know, you mentioned earlier about the month of April being acknowledged in part as Parkinson's Disease Awareness Month. And, you know, I think of that and think, well, if that's the case, then where are we in terms of how aware most people are? And then the other aspect of this is something that comes up sometimes as a question, and it did by someone to me this week, knowing that I was going to be speaking with you today. A lot of people, when they think of Parkinson's disease, they immediately, for whatever reason, think of tremors and people shaking. Does someone have to have a tremor to be diagnosed with Parkinson's disease?
No, they don't. And that is a misconception, and that's often what we hear about patients that come to us, and they say, well, my doctor said, well, you don't have a tremor, you don't have Parkinson's disease. It's not true. Now, tremor is one of the diagnostic items that we look for to see if someone has Parkinson's disease, but there are Parkinson's patients that don't have any tremor at all. They never developed it and will never develop the tremor. What's interesting is Parkinson's is so different in every patient. You know, every patient's symptoms can be very, very different from each other. Their response to medication can be different from each other. So, again, it is really critical to get to an expert to tease these issues out and be properly diagnosed.
You know, when I was bringing that point up about awareness, you know, you mentioned the names Michael J. Fox, Muhammad Ali, and as you said that, I thought, well, if those names, those images don't promote awareness and don't provide, I guess, motivation, because we saw literally the struggles that those two individuals went through in a very public fashion. Seeing that, didn't that broaden awareness of this disease?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, they have done so much. Those people, and also some others that have come and have said that they have Parkinson's disease, have done so much to break this lack of awareness about Parkinson's disease, where it's almost, you know, whoever you speak to, if you say, oh, you know, Parkinson's disease, it kind of clicks images of Michael J. Fox and Muhammad Ali, so they've actually shed a lot of light on the disorder, and they've been really instrumental, and not just them, but also the major Parkinson's Foundation, the National Parkinson's Foundation, the American Parkinson's Disease Association. They've really put light on the disorder and have brought awareness to it in all of the aspects that we're talking about, both at the policy level, at the funding level, and also at the patient and caregiver level. It's been a really great what they have done.
We're talking on our program On the Fan with our guest in this first hour of our program. Dr. Houman Azmi is the director of the Division of Functional and Restorative Neurosurgery at Hackensack University Medical Center. He's talking with us on our program. He's also a partner at North Jersey Brain and Spine Center. We have about a minute before we're going to take a pause in our discussion. Let me just mention the fact that next Saturday, the 23rd Parkinson's Unity Walk is going to take place in Central Park. Can you just give us an idea, first of all, what's the environment like with that?
It's a great environment. It's a great event. It's been held since the mid-90s. What's great about it is that every dollar that is raised goes to research. And it goes to all the organizations that we discussed, and it is then there's no administrative costs and so forth. It really every dollar they raise goes to Parkinson's disease research, and they've raised over the years millions of dollars that go to research, and it's a great environment. It's in April, so usually the weather is great. There is patients come with their family members, with their caregivers. There's the various teams that have supported the patients through the years, and people come from all across the U.S. I've seen patients from Canada that come down, take a bus in, and it's in Central Park. It's an excellent environment that kind of brings the whole community together. So if people are around next Saturday, I really highly recommend getting to the park and partaking in the walk.
All right, I want to talk more about that. We'll take a little pause here in our discussion with you, Dr. Azmi, on our program here on The Fan. It is Sunday morning on WFAN. We're in a discussion about the topic of Parkinson's disease with Dr. Houman Azmi on our program. He's the director of the Division of Functional and Restorative Neurosurgery at Hackensack University Medical Center. He is also a partner at North Jersey Brain and Spine Center, and he's talking with us this hour of our program on WFAN. You know, I neglected to mention in the course of this discussion, too, because sometimes we get into discussions here, and I just don't even think about this. You want to join us if there's a thought or question you have on point with what we're talking about this topic of Parkinson's disease. Maybe it's touched your life in some fashion, or you have a question. Excellent opportunity to jump in with that at 877-337-6666. That's our number here at The Fan. Now, the thought I had about the Unity Walk. First of all, with the type of information that is available there, do people come and, do they come and spend the day? Or how do people generally use their time? Because I'm trying to paint a picture for people who may never have heard of this before but might have an interest in it and very well may be able to benefit from some of the information that's available.
Sure. I mean, basically, the walk happens in New York City at Central Park, and the events start around 8 o'clock or so, and by noon, the day is basically over. So, I mean, the walk is actually, it used to be where the walk would be at the same time, everyone would do the walk together, and over the years, they've kind of made it, people can walk at any time, and so the events are going on, and there's a lot more information for patients, and there's a lot more interaction that goes on. So it's generally the morning that occurs, and like I said, it's a great event. It's really, so the Parkinson's Alliance has been tremendous in putting this together every year. And it's a great place for patients and families and basically team members, all the caregivers for that patient to come and meet others and share stories and learn about Parkinson's disease, and certainly help contribute to efforts to ultimately cure this disorder and have better treatments.
For people who have just joined us in our discussion, we kind of alluded to this earlier, but I'm going to bring this up because, again, this does come up as a question. Somebody who has Parkinson's, they may have concern that they're going to pass that along to their children. What do you say to them?
So the majority of us that develop Parkinson's disease develop it sporadically, meaning it is not one of those clusters of genes or families. It just happens like how we develop high blood pressure or diabetes and so forth. So the chance of passing that to our children is very small. Basically the chance of developing Parkinson's disease is 2%, and the chance of our children having Parkinson's disease is about 4% of those that have Parkinson's. So still there's more than 90% chance that they don't develop it. But it's important to learn about it, and as new diagnostic tools come up. And they are coming about to have those tools available.
When we talk about quality of life for Parkinson's patients and their families and their caregivers, what's that like?
So, Parkinson's, and let me preface it by saying it's very different in every patient.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that before, but it can advance, when it advances, it does affect people and their family members, just because it affects how someone moves. And as Parkinson's advances, I mean, this is really different for every patient, so I don't want to worry your listeners, but it can become to the point that they become very dependent on the medication. So they're taking medication every 3 hours, every 2 hours, sometimes around the clock, where their movement, their ability to move is dependent on this. And this affects the family as well. Just imagine if someone you loved had to take medication around the clock, sometimes in the middle of the night. The whole family dynamic changes. The spouse has to wake up in the middle of the night with the patient and make sure they get their medicine on time. And it affects social situations. Patients, if they're not moving well, if they don't feel well, they may not be able to go out with their friends. It affects those that are in the workforce. They may be afraid of the stigma of Parkinson's disease and their ability. So it can have a big impact on quality of life and our sense of ourselves. But it is important to know, again, this is part of the awareness process. It is important to know there's excellent treatment out there. Patients are not alone. They should reach out to these national organizations that have support groups locally at basically every town and so forth has a local support group very much near them, and for the caregivers as well, because it can take a toll on the family. And if you would find generally patients with Parkinson's and their caretakers are enormously helpful to others because of what they've gone through themselves.
When we talk about options for medical treatments, what sort of things are on the table now?
So the good thing is almost every year or every 6 months there is a new medication that comes out for Parkinson's disease. But in general, these are in a few different classes, but they aim to replace the neuro neurotransmitter that the brain doesn't produce anymore. They aim to replace or mimic the dopamine that is not made in the brain anymore. So there are different classes of that, and there's different ways they're administered. But in general, this is what medications do. And they really do help the symptoms of Parkinson's disease. You know, it's remarkable, some patients, when they're on when they're taking their medications and it's effectively working, you really can't tell they have Parkinson's disease. And I think it's important for your listeners to know there is excellent treatment out there. They just have to, you know, it's probably shocking or as hard as you said to hear that diagnosis, but they've got to get to the right physicians, and they have to be properly diagnosed, and they have to be properly counseled and started on correct medication. And we can have a very good quality of life with Parkinson's disease. We can live well with Parkinson's disease, and that starts with being advocates for ourselves.
Some people who are listening to our discussion today have heard talk about DBS, or deep brain stimulation. I don't think in the history of doing this show that we've ever really explored this topic in depth. What is deep brain stimulation?
So deep brain stimulation is a surgical procedure where we implant a pacemaker in the brain. If you've seen anyone with a heart pacemaker, it is a similar concept where there's a battery that generates electricity, and the electricity is emitted into the brain through a small wire. The wire is the size of essentially an angel head spaghetti. So very thin wire that we put in the brain very precisely. There's a lot of technology and expertise goes into placing those wires. Once everything is implanted, that the battery sends electrical. We have to program it. So a movement disorder neurologist that is an expert in deep brain stimulation turns it on. That's what programming means, and finds the correct settings for the patient. And the system continually produces electricity that affects the circuits of the brain that are not working properly. The patient really doesn't feel anything. There is first of all, very low levels of electricity, and secondly, the patient does not feel anything. But it helps restore some of this abnormal signaling to closer to normal, and it is an excellent treatment for a very select group of patients. And it's not for every patient with Parkinson's disease. So patients go through what's called a candidacy process, where a group of doctors tries to figure out if the surgery is indicated for the patient, and if the risks justify them having the surgery, because it is brain surgery. But in the correctly selected patient, it is an excellent treatment option and really does restore quality of life to a great extent.
The MRI-guided deep brain stimulation, who becomes a candidate for that?
The surgery is still the same. It is implanting the electrodes, but traditionally the surgery, and if your viewers do a Google search or do a YouTube search, there's plenty of video out there where we wake patients up during parts of the surgery, not all of the surgery. During the surgical parts, often patients are asleep but breathing on their own, but then we wake them up to map the brain. And during that part, the patients need to be off their medication. And as hard as we try, and there are excellent teams across the United States that do this, the thought of being awake and the thought of being off of medication is difficult for patients, especially as you heard, some of these patients they really depend on every 2 hour, every 3 hour administration of these medications. So if we keep them off of it, it is uncomfortable for them, and their symptoms come out. The MRI guided technique, and there's also MRI is an imaging machine, a way that we take pictures of the brain. There's also a CAT scan guided, which is also another machine that we take images of the brain. So they supplement the surgery by image guidance and rely less on the patient needing to be participating or awake during the surgery, and allows surgeons to do the surgery in a way that's more comfortable for the patient, and ultimately we believe is potentially safer than having patients be awake. And there are excellent centers across the U.S. that are doing both techniques. But really, that is just a way of doing the surgery. The important thing for patients that are listening to this is going to a team that's experienced and know what they're doing and properly get selected. The most important thing in outcomes for someone undergoing VBS is the selection process. We really need to make sure that the surgery is going to help them before putting them through. So experienced teams can assess the patient and then do the surgery safely. And either technique has excellent outcomes in experienced hands.
And what other treatment options, I guess, are being explored at this time?
So there is, of course, medications are we're getting more and more medications that are coming out that are attacking the Parkinson's at different parts of the chain that result in the symptoms of the patient. There are ways to give the medication not by pills, but by a continuous way of getting it into the gut that was just recently FDA approved in the United States. There's certainly surgical options that are being explored in terms of both the gene therapy and implantation of trophic factors. There's also a new technique called a high intensity focus ultrasound that was developed in Israel, where the ultrasound waves are focused on a spot in the brain, and that spot creates a little burn in that spot, and that helps symptoms. So that has been FDA approved in the United States for a condition called essential tremor, which is just a tremor, no other symptoms. But the efficacy of that is being explored for Parkinson's disease as well.
For people who want more information on this discussion, where would you guide them online?
We're very fortunate to have excellent advocacy organizations, the National Parkinson's Foundation, the Parkinson's Alliance, the American Parkinson's Disease Association, the Michael J. Fox Association. These are excellent resources for patients to connect them to teach them about the disorder, to connect them to the right people, to connect them to clinical trials that are ongoing if patients want to be involved in investigative drugs, and connect them to the support and advocacy groups. They're really, I highly recommend the caregivers or patients that may or others who may know someone with Parkinson's disease to get on these websites and learn about it. And actually, if they have a chance to come to the Unity Walk, because all of these organizations are going to be there with information and with representatives.
When will you be specifically at the Ask the Experts booth?
So I will be there for the entire day. So
good.
I will be there. Other hospital systems in the area will be there as well. So I look forward to meeting our patients and caregivers that go by us in the walk.
Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Azmi. Dr. Houman Azmi talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.